gonna make it look easy. Run it up. The very last episode.
It was even fitting that I messed up the intro bumper.
Oh, it was beautiful. I loved every second. That is, of course, the incredible, effervescent, best button pusher in the industry, Justin Scarlett. Will Sled is running that Periscope like a champion.
Yeah.
And I'm Peyton Gallagher.
Don't use every word in the thesaurus in the first 2 minutes.
Oh, I've got plenty. We'll keep it going for the entire 2 hours that we have left. An incredible three-month ride through a very rough time in the lives of a lot of people. Incredibly grateful, and we'll do the sappy part at the end, but incredibly grateful on this Thanksgiving Eve for the opportunity to do this, to get better every day. That was extended to myself by Nate Hodges and the Fan Run Radio family. So, like I said, we'll get into the sappy part because I've got to lay into Tom Brady now, but that'll be at the end of the show. So if you want to stick around for that, that's what's going on.
Yeah, focus on the important things here.
Yeah. So Tom Brady gets the ball last night on Monday Night Football against the Rams. It's the end of the game. Down 3 points. Jared Goff had just led a field goal drive to put the Rams up, and I've seen the movie so many times. It might as well be my favorite movie. That movie that you watch when you're sitting in the backseat of your parents' minivan with, you know, the little TV headrests, right?
Yeah.
Like maybe it's The Land Before Time.
What about Shrek?
Or Shrek, that's another good
one.
That's a good one. The movie you watch at the dentist office. That's this movie. Tom Brady gets the ball down. The Rams unable to finish off with a touchdown and put it out of the range of the Buccaneers, Tom Brady's team, to win the game on the final drive. Tom Brady gets the ball back with around 2 minutes, goes the length of the field, scores a touchdown as time expires, game over. That didn't happen. He threw a pick. I said before that drive, as we've been trying to figure out what Tom Brady is all year long, that if he doesn't make this happen, he's washed. He's done. Which is a black and white way of looking at it. But sometimes when we're talking about superheroes like Tom Brady, it's harder to explain and simpler to explain at the same time than one drive. Of course, there's a lot more going on. But Tom Brady, the superhero Tom Brady, Tom Terrific, gets this done. He wins this game. And maybe, that's maybe too black and white to look at a very nuanced situation. But the pick was entirely on him. Deep seam, over the middle. In this game, Brady, who has been pretty proficient so far this year on passes that are traveling longer than 20 yards, which this one was. In this game, he was 0 for 6. He threw two interceptions, and that was the undoing of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that was going to be this thing that defined their season. Could Tom Brady exist in an offense that was not going to change for him? Because Bruce Arians was going to run this vertical passing attack till the wheels came off because that's what he's going to do. Could Tom Brady be the guy to execute that? Tom Brady has been up and down. All the losses haven't been his fault, but the most recent two have. And it's been striking. I've never seen him look like this before, especially with the amount of talent around him. There's more talent on this team, I'd say, in terms of NFL accomplishment, than any team he had in New England at any time. Maybe the Randy Moss team, maybe. But you look at the Hall of Fame caliber dudes that are on this team, it's hard to find an argument for any other squad that Brady's played with being better than this one, and now he's cost them back-to-back games. And when I talk about Tom Brady and how it's so automatic when he gets the ball there at the end of the game, you just expect it to be over. Elway did this for years. Manning did this for years. Tom has led 47 game-winning drives in his career, which is the third most in NFL history. That's where this guy lives. That's where he eats. That's where he's at his absolute best, is that you know he's just going to unravel you down the field. It's like Michael Jordan with the ball in his hands for the final shot. It's automatic. And it wasn't. And that was not Tom Brady that I saw last night. We're going to have Henry Schleiser on here in a couple minutes to talk about that. He's been very invested in this Buccaneers team, was his Super Bowl pick out of the NFC before the season started, was fervent in his support for Brady in saying that there was nothing to worry about. It was the weapons. And I don't think at this point you can look at him and look at the Bucs and how the last two of three games have gone and not be concerned about Tom Brady. It's too late in the year. The mistakes are too unlike him. It's hard not to overreact to what we've seen. This guy has made a career out of ripping people's souls out, crushing them up, and watching the dust trickle through his ring-adorned fingers. Tom Brady gets that done last night. I cannot reiterate it enough. He didn't get it done last night. For the first time that I can recall, maybe I'm turning a blind eye to something, but Justin, will I pose a question to you? You guys have watched football your entire lives. Tom Brady has been playing football your entire lives. Have you ever seen him get the ball last with an opportunity to win the game and turn the ball over?
I mean, no, not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, no.
The only time I can remember was the end of last season when they had to go 90-some-odd yards against the Titans in their divisional playoff game. The wild card round playoff game, and he threw an interception. And we said Tom Brady was washed. That just gets louder and louder every time this happens. It's incredible. What else could happen in 2020? Things that are perceived to never, ever break down and crumble or breaking down and crumbling. It's just, it's remarkable. Because I do think this is the end of Tom Brady. I do. I'm sure he'll prove me wrong and they'll win the Super Bowl. We'll carry on. They play the Chiefs this weekend. I'm sure they'll beat the Chiefs. I'm sure he'll throw for 400 yards and look amazing. But I've never, ever, ever seen Tom Brady look like this. We'll talk to our friend Henry Schleiser, who's been an installation in this program. Only fitting he's on the final episode when we get back from the break. This is Run It Up, WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. Run It Up. We've got a good friend of the program with us. It's been a while. Henry Schleiser joins via the phone lines from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville, a host of the Waiver Wire podcast, which is available on all podcast streaming platforms. Henry, your team this year that you were so high on was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We're going to dig into everything that happened last night and whether or not we should be sounding alarms. But before we do that, how you doing, my man?
Kane, I'm great. I'm happy to be here. Happy to be wrapping up the show with
you. Yes, sir.
I've loved calling in, loved being a part of this. So I'm really happy to be here. You know, I'm Phil Mines. And ready to talk some football, as always.
Yeah, let's get into it. But before that, yeah, I want to thank you. You've been a colossal part of this program. We could not have done it without you. And I'm certainly very proud of what we've been able to accomplish in the 3 months that the show has existed amidst adverse conditions. And I'm glad that you've been a part of that as well. So let's talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Last night was not good. The defense struggled in the first half, righted the ship, no pun intended, in the second half. Tom Brady gets the ball at the end of the game with a chance to go take the lead with about 2.5 minutes left, and he throws an interception. And not just an interception, a bad interception. It was his second of the night, and he's really struggled over the last 3 weeks. The Carolina game, he was good. The defense struggled as a team. They've not been their sharpest over the last 3 weeks. What are your biggest takeaways from the stretch, and do you think they can kind of get things turned around?
I certainly think they can get things turned around. I mean, obviously, Bruce Arians is one of the best coaches in the NFL.
Sure.
And then Byron Leftwich and Todd Bowles are two of the best in the business as well. So the Buccaneers definitely can turn it around. But this is interesting to look at because despite all the weapons that the Buccaneers have, Tom Brady, you know, short of because of circumstance and the weapons he did have in New England, he's missing that pass-catching third down back. For whatever, like, it seems like no back in Tampa Bay can catch a ball out of the backfield, and the only guy who can, Shady McCoy, isn't playing. Leonard Fournette dropped 3 straight passes last night. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ronald Jones can't catch a pass to save his life. And Tom Brady relied so much on that pass catching back, on second and third down situations, so much throughout his 20 years in New England with guys like Kevin Falk, James White, and those are two of the guys who just, you know, right off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. But there are so many other guys who he relied on heavily.
Sure.
And so they don't. Tampa Bay doesn't have a guy like that. And I think that's something that I think they're suffering. They're suffering from their own wealth, I think, in a way, where you have guys. You've got Mike Evans, A.B., Rob Gronkowski, Chris Godwin. You have all these weapons, and I feel like you're trying to spread it all out, get everybody their share, when that's not what you should be doing. Gronk's a step slow. A.B. doesn't look like the same player. He's lost a step. He's not that dude that he used to be. He's been out of the league for most he's been out of the league for a year and a half. That's understandable. They don't go, I think, nearly enough to their playmakers. This is a team that still can win the Super Bowl, that is far from out of it, because the NFC is so wide open. They can still make a run at the Super Bowl. They're far from dead, but they have tons and tons and tons of problems that they need to work out. They've got to start scheming it up, because this team is too talented to fall flat.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing that I've always kind of thought this was going to be an interesting experiment and exercise in, was can you pretty much synthesize a super team in a lab before the season, throw it together as you go with not a lot of continuity and just a bunch of talent, and see what happens. And right now it kind of feels like some of the cracks are starting to show. My question to you would be, based on what we saw against New Orleans, based on what we saw against the Rams, the two teams that are going to be in the playoffs that they've played most recently. Now, they play Kansas City this week. We'll see if they can't maybe make some noise there, but they played both those teams at home, and they lost both games. I think based on the performance, it's kind of hard to not overreact. Do you think the general consensus is an overreaction, or do you think the cause for concern is legitimate, and you could see the thread being pulled to the point where this falls apart down the backstretch? I'm not asking you if you think it's going to happen. I'm asking you if you think it could.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I think this team has a very slim margin for error just because they are so talented. And obviously, you know, you're 6-2 with a loss in week one to New Orleans and a loss to the Bears where you were super banged up and on the road on a short week going into that Saints game in Raymond James. And then you just absolutely just lay an egg on national TV. And it looks like you, not that you quit, but you just didn't have any sort of fight. And
right.
I think if you have a loss like that, you could chalk it up as you got punched in the mouth. You played a bad game. You weren't ready. You move on. This last game on Monday Night Football, not so much. I don't want to say this game was a collapse because it wasn't, but it's a game you should have won. And it's a game you had every opportunity to win, and you couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this Rams game has more causes for concern than the Saints game a few weeks ago.
Yep.
I mean, and to answer your question, Payne, I know I'm kind of stringing it along,
no.
But yes, I do think it is a possibility that things go awry here. I mean, Tom Brady is a competitor. Tom Brady also hasn't dealt well with adversity and losing in his career. I mean, obviously we've seen when he's lost Super Bowls, he comes back and he wins it, but, you know, this isn't looking like something, this isn't New England.
Yeah.
This is a totally different scenario, totally different coaching staff. And listen, Bruce Arians is a great coach, and I have all the respect in the world for him and his coaching staff. These are not coaches who have been to the level that Tom Brady has been to.
Yeah.
Bruce Arians has coached in Super Bowls, but never as a head coach. He's never done that.
Michael Jordan on the Wizards.
Exactly. I mean, it's like whoa, hold on. I'm not going to go there yet.
I was not trying to lead you there. I was not trying to lead you there. It's just a thing I thought of this paragon of greatness being in a new situation, and then all of a sudden there's a lot of things that are different, and maybe the organization as a whole doesn't know how to win like Tom Brady does.
And I think that, I mean, you just look at the guys. Chris Godwin and Mike Evans have never been in the playoffs.
Wow, yeah.
You look at the guys, you look at the guys who they do have, who have, you know, won and been successful in the league, like Gronk, a product of, you know, not a product of New England, but he was in New England, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Shady McCoy, who's been around winners recently. You look at these guys, and these aren't your top playmakers. Your top playmakers and your best players are guys who have never been in the postseason, with the exception of Tom Brady. The Bucs' five best players on their roster, who, in my opinion, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Lavonte David, Devin White,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm excluding Tom Brady in those lists, and I know he's hurt. But,
and he's not one of their best five players, might I add.
And he's not. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that team is crazy. And then, you know, on the defense, Vita Vea, JVP,
mm-hmm.
all of these guys have never been, I know I said JVP, excuse him, none of those guys have ever been in the playoffs.
Right.
They've never been in the playoffs. They have never even experienced a team that has won over nine games.
Sure.
That's something that's, it's not alarming, but it's just something that I think teams have to look at when, I know I had super high expectations for the Bucs, but now as we've gone through the season, I think I've been like kind of toning back my expectations.
Yeah.
Because this team is young,
mm-hmm.
they don't know how to win. The Bucs organization as a whole in the past 15 years has been kind of wacky. I think Jason Light is a great GM. I think he's done a great job, but he's made his fair share of mistakes like every GM. The Bucs have made their fair share of mistakes in an organization, and they've struggled to find stability.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what we're seeing now is we're seeing, you know, Tom Brady, one of the best quarterback to ever do it, come in, and he's not dealing with guys who... How many guys on the Bucs are, at the start of the season, are thinking, our goal is to win the Super Bowl? Before this year, none. That's what the expectation is. It was in New England every year.
Yeah.
Is our expectation is to win the Super Bowl. In Tampa Bay, it was our expectation is to win seven games.
Right.
And if we get there, it was a good season.
Sure.
There's a big difference, and there's a big drop-off when you're Tom Brady coming to something like that. So, yes, I do think all this could unravel because in a whole bunch of ways.
Yeah. I want to ask you this because I want to gauge how much you think rides on Brady, because we saw Peyton Manning, given football has massively, massively evolved since the Sheriff won his last Super Bowl and rode off into the sunset. But we did see Peyton Manning kind of regress into this more game manager type quarterback his last year and ride a defense and other skill players to a Super Bowl title. Do you think this Tampa Bay team is good enough to do that without Tom Brady playing at a higher level than he currently is?
With the way the NFL is right now, absolutely not. I don't care how good your defense is. There are a few teams in the AFC that can absolutely boat race you if you don't have an offense. I mean, you know me, I'm a Bears fan.
Right.
The Bears have maybe the most talented, a top five defense in the NFL.
Yeah,
it
for
doesn't
sure.
matter. It does not matter because their offense can't do anything. And I'm not trying to turn this into a Bears rant, but if your offense is inept and can't do anything, can't put up yards, can't generate drives, and stay on the field, it doesn't matter. I mean, I think that 2015 Broncos team was such an anomaly because their offense wasn't very good, but they still had a run game. They were still able to stay on the field. They weren't scoring touchdowns, but they were staying on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So their defense was well rested. Like, you can't do that now. you saw what Andy Reid said. He's like, at the end of the game, I have Pat Mahomes, a minute and a half.
Yeah, game over.
It's easy. Yeah, it's easy. And he's right. And I know that's a little different than what we're talking about, but that's the point. It's like you had teams like the Steelers and the Chiefs, and even like you look at the other teams in the AFC, like I'm just going to start throwing out teams that will and will not make the playoffs, like the Chargers and the Raiders. And you look at, like I know the Ravens have their fair share of struggles, but the Ravens can put up points on you, and they can put up yards. I know they're struggling right now, but when they're clicking on all cylinders, they're dangerous. And you look at all these teams in the AFC that can put up tons of yards and tons of points in their sleep. So I don't care how good your defense is, you can't ride their coattails if you don't have at least an above-average offense.
And by the way, the defense has been struggling over the past couple of weeks. When you look at when we thought the Buccaneers were finally kind of coming out of the cocoon and blossoming into the team that could really push the Chiefs, that was about a month ago when they beat Green Bay 38-10 and they beat the Raiders 45-20 in Allegiant Stadium, and that defense was rolling and they were sacking everybody and they were playing great football on that end of the ball. And then they gave up 23 points to the Giants, then 38 to the Saints, 23 to the Panthers, but the Panthers scored a ton of points early and then Teddy got hurt. 27 last night to the Rams, and most of those points came in the first half where the defense pretty much got run out of the building. They showed up in the second half, caused a couple turnovers. I think Jared Goff kind of regressed a little bit in that second half. He was flinging the ball all over the place. I think it caught him off guard that he wasn't just going to shell up and go to that play-action game that Sean McVay really uses to protect him a little bit. But all that said, this defense has looked really susceptible to the long ball because the secondary that had played well that I thought was going to be a problem before the year has not been that great. They've been a group that a lot of times, and I'm going to get real football talky here, but Todd Bowles loves blitzing almost as much as anybody in the league, and he's got the personnel to do it up front. They go to a zero coverage look with no high safety back and put their corners in man coverage all the time in the scheme. But Bowles feels so uncomfortable doing that that they're still playing zone in the back end with only three guys back there, and teams have figured that out. They figured out that you can hit them with double moves, hit them with the long ball, and that's how you beat the Buccaneers. Do you think this defense can improve at all really quickly before we move on to the rest of the league?
Do I think it can improve? Absolutely. I don't know if they can this year, because Peyton, we're in week 11.
Yeah.
We just finished week 11. We're heading into week 12. You are what you are at this point. This isn't the end of September. This isn't the beginning of October. You're not heading into your week 5 bye where you can make adjustments. This is, you're trying to figure out what path you're taking to make the playoffs now. Like, this is, every single game matters. And you're not making a team adjustments now. There's no room for error, as weird as that sounds, because the Bucs have their problems, as do most teams in the NFC. But you're not making adjustments at this point. You're riding with what you got because you are what you are.
Do you put any credence really quickly in this Brady bedtime thing of he started going to bed at 8 p.m. this year, and all of the Buccaneers' losses have been primetime games, and it throws off his sleep schedule? Does that mean anything to you, or is that just stupid?
I think people are just trying to make something out of nothing. I think that's completely ridiculous. That's some people are just trying to make a story out of absolutely nothing.
Last thing here. Do you put any stock in the fact that he didn't shake Nick Foles' hand after the Chicago game, and he didn't shake Jared Goff's hand last night?
I know it's like common football courtesy to do it, but honestly, no.
Okay.
I know the only guys who he's done it with after losses, I mean, Drew Brees, it's guys he has personal relationships with. I mean, and look, I don't necessarily agree with it. I think you should always should shake your opponent's hands, but I disagree with Tom there, but I don't think it's really anything that people should be overreacting about. He did it in New England. He's done it wherever. He's done it his whole career. I mean, it's not something people need to be overreacting about now.
Okay, moving on from Tampa to another struggling apparent so-called contender. What's your take right now on the Ravens? Do you see a fix for the struggles that they've kind of experienced over the past month offensively and just as a team?
I know I just said you are what you are, but hey, this team has a lot of problems.
Yeah.
This team has a lot of problems. They are not the team they were last year. They don't have an identity. They don't have a guy they lean on in the run game. Mark Ingram looks terrible, and I know he just went on the COVID list, him and J.K. Dobbins. And they don't have Hayden Hurst anymore. Nick Boyle's hurt. They don't have a blocking tight end. Mark Andrews can't block.
No.
I mean, he's basically a receiver. He's a receiver who's got okay hands. And he's their best offensive weapon. Hollywood Brown is a two at best. Willie Snead is a wide receiver four on most teams in the NFL. Marshall Young, I remember saying at the beginning of the year, and it was not on this show, it was on my own podcast, but at the beginning of the year, I said the loss of Marshall Yanda is going to be huge for the Ravens, and that's really going to affect them. And I didn't think it would be this bad. They miss Marshall Yanda so much. This team is struggling so much. On the defensive side of the ball, they don't have a game changer. I mean, Wink Martindale is having to... They use more blitz packages than almost every other team in the league. They don't have them. They can't get there with four. They have to rush five, six guys. This is a team that has a lot of problems, and they're gonna lose to Pittsburgh on Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
and luckily their saving grace is that their end of season schedule is a cakewalk. But they're going to be a one and done team in the postseason, and then you're going into this offseason with Lamar Jackson. You're thinking, gee, we haven't won a playoff game with this guy. It's been one and done for three straight years. They don't adjust very well to teams. They can't play from behind. They can't run the ball. They can't really throw the ball. They're not a very good football team. This is a team with a lot of issues, and they're going to have a lot of tough questions that they're going to have to answer when they inevitably lose in the wild card round.
Yeah. I mean, Lamar Jackson, it's going to be interesting to see how the Ravens treat him going forward. We'll see. He's going to be up for an extension not too far from now. This is year three for him. His second contract is coming up. That's the contract that Pat Mahomes just got. That's the contract that Deshaun Watson just got. It'll be interesting to see what the Ravens feel like they should be able to commit to him long-term and whether or not they think he is the guy, if he is the problem or not. Let's talk about the quarterbacks that are having a better day now. I think particularly with the recent swell of momentum behind Pat, that it's become pretty clear that Mahomes is the MVP frontrunner. At this point, I think he's safely past Russ because of how Russ has kind of slid back a little bit and how he's played over the last three games of football. Who do you see as the best bet to challenge him down the stretch for the award? Is it Kyler Murray? Is it Aaron Rodgers? Is it maybe somebody I'm not talking about? Obviously, there's Russell as well.
Well, Peyton, before we get into this conversation, let me just say, I think Pat Mahomes is going to win this MVP.
Yeah.
He's locked it up, pretty much. I mean, and I remember at the beginning of the year when the Seahawks were 4-0, Russ was playing like the MVP through the first quarter of the season, but Pat was right there with him. And obviously, Pat Mahomes, turned it up. They're 9-1. I know. They'll probably, I think, end up being the second seed in the AFC just because, I mean, Pittsburgh's 10-0 they don't play anybody good down
right.
the stretch.
They may go 16-0 and not be the Super Bowl betting favorite when the playoffs start, and that's incredible to me.
Yes. I think the Chiefs will probably finish around 14-2. They could go 15-1, but I think they'll be 14-1, and then the last game of the year, they'll just sit everybody.
Yeah.
But this is Pat Mahomes' MVP. It's his thing to lose, but I think if anyone's going to challenge him, that's a really tough question because I'm still not super – I'm obviously, Kyler's great, but I'm not super high on him winning the MVP this year just because he's still – there's still some kinks in his game, and there should be. He's a second-year starting quarterback. But Kyler's great. He's just not quite there yet. The guy I'd probably say who's most likely to challenge – I'll go Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
The Packers have so many flaws. He makes them contenders. He makes them somewhat dangerous.
Danger Russ? No, Aaron Rodgers.
No, not Danger Russ.
Okay.
But I know that wasn't a very good answer. I just don't think anybody's sniffing Pat Mahomes.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Don't force it if you don't think it's possible. I tend to agree with you. I mean, I've watched Pat Mahomes closely. I try to remove all bias. I think it's hard to not sound biased when you are a fan of the team and the quarterback is this good, but I feel like I can look at things analytically, and I think it is pretty clear for anybody who's actually really watched Pat that he is significantly better now than he was the year he won MVP, and that's remarkable because that guy almost shattered every record in the book. But right now the quarterback that's playing is playing at the highest level of football, certainly since I saw Peyton Manning do what he did the year that they lost to the Seahawks. I think the highest level I've seen ever. It's been virtually flawless to this point in the year. 41% of his passes that have been completed have been first downs this year. That's ridiculous. I'm going to move on now to the team that he beat.
Incredible.
Yeah, we got to appreciate him while he's playing. It's crazy that we're saying that already now that he's only, 4 years into his career? But, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think the Raiders pose the most legitimate threat to the Chiefs in the AFC?
Ooh.
Because I do. I do not want to see that team a third time.
That's a really good question. I mean, I'll say this. I said this earlier in the year. I mean, I said I think the Raiders could be a pesky, dangerous team, and I think they're more than that. I think they're a playoff team. I didn't think they were going to make the playoffs earlier in the year, but now I think they absolutely can, and I think they will. I mean, I know they lost to the Chiefs, and, you know, I know you could say, you know, you lost to Pat Mahomes. You lost to the best team in football.
Mm-hmm.
You played them perfectly for 60 minutes.
Twice now.
You were so close to perfect. You split with them, and you were one drive away from sweeping them.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really, really good football team. I know they had a bad loss to New England earlier in the year, but this is a team that can play with anybody. And I think a lot of this credit, obviously, Josh Jacobs is great. John Gruden has done an excellent job. Him and Mike Mayock have really rebuilt this team. Derek Carr deserves a lot more respect.
Hey,
Derek Carr.
Hey, I've said this before, and I don't want to cut you off, but I feel like if you made Aaron Rodgers and Derek Carr switch places, and Derek Carr was doing what he was doing, carrying the name Rodgers on the back plate on his jersey, he would be the second challenger in the MVP race.
I mean, look, Derek Carr is unbelievable. And I think a lot of people remember 2017, 2018 Derek Carr, post-injury where he was playing a little timid, coming off of a really, really bad injury.
Yeah.
But no one wants it. I mean, he threw 32 touchdowns in 2015, and then was right up there in the MVP conversation in 2016 until he got hurt. So this is a guy who was playing at an extremely high level before a really, really tough injury. And now he's playing at that same level, but nobody, I think, is ready to look back at those years and be like, yeah, this guy's back. He's come back. He's reemerged. They just look at those injury years. I mean, he was struggling, and the Raiders tore it all down and started to rebuild, and he didn't have a lot around him, but this is a guy who's been playing really, really good football, and he's been playing really well all year. And the Raiders deserve a lot of credit because they've rebuilt this team really, really fast, and they play a brand of football. They play Raider football, where I mean, I know they air it out and they play the new look NFL offense, but they're also gritty, they're tough, and they smack teams in the mouth, and they go and they play everybody super, super hard.
Yeah.
And I think the Chiefs are the best team in the NFL, but like this is going to be a fun rivalry for the next 8-10 years as we're watching Pat Mahomes go up against a really, really tough, pesky Raiders team that I know it's hard. The term rattling Pat Mahomes is really tongue-in-cheek, but this is a team that can make him a little bit uncomfortable. And this is a team that will give the Chiefs trouble every year for the next 8-9 years.
Wow. I mean, I don't know if I'm willing to commit to that. But, yeah, I mean, from what we've seen this year, yes, there's not a team that matchup-wise can pose the same kind of problems with how And here's the part of Las Vegas that has not gotten enough credit at all this year. This is the best offensive line in the NFL. The Chiefs' defense relies on creating pressure and not necessarily being a great defense, but being able to make you make a couple mistakes because they know their offense isn't, and they'll outscore you that way. And they can't make the Raiders do that. They don't have a guy who can guard Darren Waller. Nelson Agholor has turned into something that I don't think anybody expected. The fact that this is just such an island of misfit toys that has come together to be this team to help Derek Carr, I've never seen a quarterback go to the depths that he was at in terms of his level of play and then reemerge as an elite player again. I've never seen a career trajectory like this where Carr was so below average, too average at best, for so long. It was 3 to 4 years. For him to reach this level of play again is just such a weird non-point A to point B progression that I can't say I recall. And I think the way this offense is architected, it's very sustainable. It's very consistent. The defense isn't good, but I think the Raiders can legitimately score with the Chiefs, and I think that's the way you have to beat them, is just get lucky, have Pat make a couple mistakes maybe, and you outscore them. And I think that's the only way it can happen, and I feel like the Raiders might be the only team in the league that can do that.
I think you might be right. I think the other team that might be able to do it, and I know they have their flaws. They haven't played a super hard schedule, but I think the Steelers might be a team that could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Steelers can score. They've got a defense that can get in your face. I think they might be able to do it, but it's a very short list, and there aren't a lot of teams who are able to, you know, make Pat uncomfortable and force. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, Andy Reid is, in my opinion, the best coach in the NFL now.
Wow, but really?
I know Belichick is obviously great, but if we're talking like this year, last year, 2018, like last 3 years, it's got to be Andy Reid. I mean, who else are you going to give it to?
No, that's totally fair. That's totally fair. I mean, you can say Shanahan, and I mean, I know he's had bad injury circumstances, and that's why two of these 3 years haven't been so great. But you can also just as easily make the counter argument of, hey, they played each other in a Super Bowl and Andy's team won. So as linear of an argument as that is, I mean, it is kind of a trump card.
Yeah, I mean, and Andy outdueled him. I mean, he went out there and outdueled him. And I know, I mean, he has Pat and Kyle didn't and all that. But Andy Reid was scheming it up with Alex Smith not too long ago. And you know, that she was pumping out 11, 12 win seasons with Alex Smith at the helm. So Andy Reid, that's my take for the night. Best coach in the NFL. But
love it.
I think if you can have the Raiders, a team that you force Andy Reid to really dive really, really deep into his playbook, that's a good thing. Because if you can make him uncomfortable and go away from his game scripts and go away from his plan, not a lot of teams can do that. And the Raiders have done it not once, but they've done it twice this year. And that's something that's really, really impressive in itself.
Let's switch gears a little bit here. Actually, I do want to say one last thing about this Chiefs team right now. The thing that nobody's paying attention to, and I'm just going to continue to enunciate this point until people pick up on it, the Chiefs are extraordinarily wounded at the moment. Mecole Hardman hardly played. He just came off COVID IR, had missed some time, was not really in game shape, so he hardly played aside from the final drive. They've been without Sammy Watkins for an extended period of time, and people don't really put a lot of thought into what Sammy Watkins is at this point because they just see an injury-riddled receiver that's never really lived up to his full potential. But I can tell you, if you really dig into the deep analytics and the numbers behind how much more efficient and how much better the Chiefs' offense is when Sammy Watkins is on the field, it is astounding. And then additionally, this offensive line is on about its ninth variation with only one of its projected starters. And again, the fact that Pat just continues to keep this offense humming at a level where nobody seems to notice that they're missing a beat is an incredible testament to the player he is and why he should win MVP. I made that argument before. I'm not going to waste time here on the show tonight doing it again, more than I have at least already. Henry, last question here before I just kind of let you sound off on the Bears situation because I feel like that's a fitting way for you to end your time with us. Would you rather have Jared Goff or Justin Herbert?
Oh, Justin Herbert, easily. Come on.
I am shocked it was so fast for you.
Jared Goff. Oh, my God. Peyton, come on, man. Justin Herbert, I know he's a rookie. Justin Herbert has arguably been a top five quarterback in the NFL this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think he has one, but he's right outside there. This is a guy who goes out every single week and throws for over 300 yards and three touchdowns. Like, now, he's a stud.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable. Jared Goff is just a beneficiary of its system. I mean, I like Anthony Lynn, and I think Anthony Lynn is a very good football mind, but he's out there trying to actively lose the Chargers games where Jared Goff is out here playing football with arguably, I don't think he is, but he's in the top three, arguably the best coach in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out there scheming it up for him. And I think the difference is Justin Herbert is the reason why the Chargers are in every single game this year. Jared Goff is the reason why the Rams are going to be held back. And that's the huge thing where if we fast forward 2 years, Peyton,
mm-hmm.
Justin Herbert is a star. He already is a star.
Yeah.
He's just going to continue to ascend. Where is Jared Goff in 2 years? In 2 years, Jared Goff might not even be the starting quarterback for the Rams.
I go back and forth with Goff. I have always been pretty negative on him. He's kind of won me over a little bit. I think he is pretty decent. I think this team does a lot of things that would make it kind of hard for most quarterbacks to be elite. He doesn't get to do the things that he did in college. He did the stuff that Herbert's doing now in college. Now, he was playing for Cal against Pac-12 defenses, so it's obviously different than the NFL. I just think that a lot of it is scenario-based, but yeah, I think Herbert is pretty special. There are three guys in the league that make you as excited as Herbert does when he leaves the pocket, because it's just, he does the on-the-run things as well as anybody. And that's electrifying. It really is Pat, Herbert, and Aaron Rodgers when they vacate the pocket, where you kind of just like perk up to an extra level of excitement because, man, when they let that thing go moving, they've just got a different kind of momentum about them that you feel like something special is going to happen. But I don't know if it's ridiculous, but I definitely think that you're in the right camp saying you'd rather have Herbert. So with that, I'm going
to
give you.
Hey, I don't want to cut you off. Justin Herbert started his first game in the NFL,
mm-hmm.
like right as kickoff was happening. And then Anthony Lynn came over and was like, hey, you're starting against the defending Super Bowl champions. And he mm-hmm. went toe-to-toe with them.
Yep, absolutely. He also threw
a
pick.
Player.
He also threw a pick at the end of the game that cost him the game and gave the Chiefs momentum to get back in it. But
I know. Yeah. But still, hey.
Not important.
It was the kid's first start in the NFL as a rookie against the defending Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, pretty good.
Beat up Chargers. Who are already decimated with injuries. He goes in, keeps him in the game the entire game, gives him a chance to win in the fourth quarter. Obviously, ends up throwing that pick, but still, regardless, impressive. I know I'm not a fan of moral victories, but as far as moral victories go, that's a good one, and he's just played better and better and better every single week.
All right. Okay, I'm going to put you on a timer now. Be better than Tom Brady was last night. You've got exactly 2 minutes. Say whatever you want about the Chicago Bears. Go.
I don't know how the defense shares a locker room and practice facility with that offense. Because if I was Khalil Mack, Keen Hicks, Kenny Jackson, Kyle Fuller, I would be throwing my jerseys on the desk of George McCaskey saying, I'm not going to play as long as Matt Nagy is the head coach of the Chicago Bears. And as long as Ryan Pace is the GM, both those guys should be fired. They should have been fired last week. And I know they won't be till the end of the year, but they should both be gone. They've set this franchise back. They've wasted one of the best defenses, not just in the NFL, but one of the best defenses in NFL history back in 2018, if you remember. They've wasted this defense. They've wasted Khalil Mack. It's sad and it's disappointing. So it's Kyle Trask / Trey Lance / Zach Wilson season for the Chicago Bears and for me. So I'm hoping we can take one from Green Bay, and then I don't care what else happens the rest of the year. I just want to win against Green Bay and then whatever, because the Bears stink. The Bears are a mess. They're a dumpster fire, and they're not getting any better.
Wow. Didn't even need the full 2 minutes. Like Pat Mahomes, surgical and efficient. All right, Henry, thank you for being a part of this journey, my man. I appreciate you coming on tonight.
Peyton, of course. I'm so happy that I was able to be a part of this. This was all. I always enjoyed my time coming on, and I know that this is only the beginning. You're going to keep doing great things. So, my friend, thanks again for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right, I appreciate it, Henry. You can check Henry out. Waiver Wire Podcast, available on all platforms. Very gracious to take the time here tonight. Run It Up will continue. We're going to talk for about 5 minutes about the first college football playoff rankings. When we come back, end hour number one, get into the Top 10 Tuesday part of the program. In hour number two, this is Run It Up, WKGM, Fox Sports Knoxville, Fan Run Radio.
About that. Big trust. Woo-woo. Lamar Jackson in the flesh.
Well, Justin, you were asked to play the hits tonight, pretty much. That was one of them. Thank you for that. Big trust. Woo-woo.
You're welcome.
Lamar Jackson in the flesh. College football playoff rankings. The initial poll is out. It is interesting, to say the least. We've got 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 3 minutes, he says. Okay, to break it down, I'm just going to break the highlights down, bounce them off Justin real quick, see what he thinks. The Fighting Reese Davises slide in at number 8 in the initial CFP poll. I don't know this for a fact, but I assume it's the highest ranking in the CFP era for the Northwestern Wildcats. Do you think they have any chance of making the playoff if they were to beat Ohio State? Wisconsin's game against Minnesota was canceled today, so they are now ineligible for the conference title game. The conference's only hope is now Ohio State and Northwestern.
If Northwestern went undefeated and then beat Ohio State in the play or in the Big Ten championship game, they would have a case.
Do you think they have any chance of doing that, though?
I don't know.
You're not going to. I was trying to get you to call them some Reese Davises, and you wouldn't do it. So
I don't know that. I don't know that much about Northwestern, to be completely honest.
You blocked in high school one of the outside linebackers, Leota.
He's good.
Yeah, he is good. he might be their best player. Let's talk about Notre Dame, number 2 in the poll. That makes sense, right? They beat Clemson. Clemson is the number 3 team. Fun fact, in the CFP era, we're now, I think, 7 years into this, the number 3 team in the initial college football playoff poll has never made the playoff.
Really?
Yes, and that's where Clemson sits right now with Trevor Lawrence. So if any team was going to break that curse, feel like it's a long-haired man with a tiger paw on his helmet. Cincinnati at 7. Florida at 6, A&M at 5. Which one of those three teams would you take to get in if a team were to get in that's not currently in the top 4?
Florida, because they have the easiest path to it, right? You go and beat Bama in the SEC championship game, you're going
to
be in.
Sure. So if Florida loses to Alabama in a close game, Clemson loses to Notre Dame in a close game, does Cincinnati get in?
Is Ohio State still undefeated Big Ten champs?
Sure.
No.
Wow.
Would I think Florida, that
was Florida get in?
I mean, then it's either going to be Cincy or A&M, right?
I don't know what A&M may not play enough games. I mean, A&M may be in the same boat as Ohio State with the way things have been trending for them the last couple of weeks. They had to cancel their game with Tennessee. They had to cancel their game with Ole Miss. I mean, they'll get to make up one of those, but I don't know how many they're going to be able to make up on the back end, especially since they already lost to Alabama the way they did. So that's going to be kind of a tough sell. I'm trying to think if there's anything else of note. Maybe Georgia's at 9. That's weird.
Yeah, they should be lower. So should Oklahoma.
They just had to really struggle to beat Mississippi State last week. Not good. Miami at 10 is fascinating to me because they're a one-loss team. Probably not going to get another shot at Clemson to avenge that loss, but they could be kind of on the outside of the bubble, kind of close. That is the end of hour one, unless you've got something to say, sir.
Oklahoma at 11 is criminal over Iowa State at 13, Indiana at 12, I mean, and BYU at 14.
Iowa State did lose to Louisiana. Let's not forget that.
They still beat Oklahoma.
Another good point. I forgot about that. Yeah. That's a fair observation. Rank Indiana in the top 10, you cowards. Come on. They're 12th. Not good enough. That's hour number one. Run It Up continues after this. Top 10 Tuesday is afoot. This is Run It Up, WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville, Fan Run Radio.